like to read the two verses of Scripture before I can live out mine the way the Lord has said it with me. And it's in Romans chapter 12. And the first two verses. Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good, and acceptable, and perfect will of God. It's an honor and a privilege to be here tonight. There are some friends that are here that I haven't seen for a long time. I was reminded when I came here the other day that it's a very, very long time, quite a number of years since I have been in the area. But the first time I was in St. Louis was 57 years ago. And the first man that I met there was our dear brother, whose son has founded this camp. You know, as I think of it, I think of the kindness that I received in St. Louis at that time. As long as I live, I'll never forget it. It made a very, very deep impression upon my mind. And when I came here yesterday and today, and see some people that I haven't seen for a long time, it rejoices my heart. And it's an honor and a privilege to be among you here this evening. You know, when I think of something that Mr. Harold St. John said to me many years ago, I think it's perfectly true. He said, every time you make a new friend, it adds an acre to your spiritual inheritance. Every time you make a new friend, it adds an acre to your spiritual inheritance. And it's a wonderful thing to have a few acres. And as far as I'm concerned, I have. And among those that I look into their faces here tonight, it brings indescribable joy to my heart. So, beloved, brethren and sisters here tonight, it's an honor and a privilege to be among you. I was brought up in a Christian home. I think most of you know that I'm an Irishman. I'm not ashamed of that. I was born in the north of Ireland 85 years ago. My father and mother were in an assembly before I was born. And I had a very, very great privilege of being brought up onto the sound of the gospel, and I never remember a time in my life when I didn't know the plain facts of the gospel. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about my early years, but just to say this, that when I came to 15 years of age, the Lord reached and saved my soul. My father was away at the time overseas. He was a soldier in the British Army and had been inducted into the British Army in the First World War. And my mother was left with five children at home, and I was the eldest in the family. And by the way, when I was 13 years of age, I left school. And I've never been in school since. I've never been in a high school. I've never been in a college of any kind. And don't go away with the idea that I wasn't interested in study. If I could have stayed in school and gone to high school and college, but my mother was left with five children, and I was the eldest in the family, and I felt that it was my responsibility to get out and work, and I did. And from the time I was 13, now you wouldn't be allowed to do that in this country today. Well, boy, I'm 13 years of age to get out and earn a living. But every penny that I earned, from the time I was 13, I brought it home and handed it into my mother's lap every day. And I'm not ashamed of that. The Lord leads one person one way and then leads another another way. And someone says, did you not miss something by not going to high school and college? Well, I did. But let me say, I've always been interested in reading. Always. And even though I was working full-time from a boy of 15, yet at the same time, I learned my education by reading. And at the present time, I can preach in five languages. I know my Greek New Testament, I can read it without any difficulty and understand what I read, and have a very, very kind library. I have been collecting books since the time I was saved when I was 15 years of age, and I think I know Nelson Faraday's collected writing. And everything that William Kelly wrote, I have a copy of that too, in F.W. Grant. And these early brethren I selected as books and I've read what I had to say. So while I missed formal education, at least I never collected any modernism, or some of the things that are still now, I'm not saying that this tonight is a way of decrying education. God knows if I had had the opportunity at the time, I would have grasped the biblical path. But the Lord led me in a different way. On the south, when I was 13, I went out and worked full time. And then when I was 16 years of age, I went into a shipyard in Belfast. At that time, it was the largest shipbuilding firm in the world that employed 28,000 men. And I went in there and served an apprenticeship for 5 years in shipbuilding. And I got a thorough education in building ships and boats, both technical and practical. I served my apprenticeship with the men who built the Titanic. And I'm awfully thankful that I learned to use my hands at that time. But it was the First World War. And in those days, Britain was on her knees. She looked as if she was going to go under. And we had to work while we could stand up. And although I was 16 years of age at the time, they started work at 6 o'clock in the morning. And worked till 5:30 at night. And then 3 nights in the work would be. 3 nights in the week, we worked overtime till 8:30. And then on Saturday, we started work at 6, worked till 4 o'clock, went home for an hour and a half, and came back at 5:30 and worked right through the night until 6 o'clock on Sunday morning. And as I say, I was 16 years of age at the time. I learned to know what work was, and I'm not ashamed of that either. I was taught how to use my hand and use my brain as well. And I know what it is that I earn my living. Now, I believe that anybody going into full-time service for the Lord should have had some experience in earning their living and budgeting their money and knowing how to spend money wisely. I believe that anyone that's in full-time service for the Lord, either in missionary work, overseas, or in the Lord's work here at home, should have had the experience of knowing what it is to punch a clock and be punctual and be able to obey orders. I think that that is a discipline that everyone should go through. And I believe that even the servant of the Lord, I believe that he should have that experience. So I'm not criticizing anybody. But as far as I'm concerned, I'm often fine. At 16 years of age, I came to know the Lord. There were a couple of evangelists came along and had 2 weeks of meetings. And I was saved the last night. I was going to go into a lot of explanation of just how it all happened. But I believe that that night, and by the way, it's 69 years ago now, it was on the 3rd of May, 1918, sitting in the right seat of a little hall over there in Northern Ireland, hearing the gospel of the grace of God, I closed in with God's offer of mercy and accepted Christ as my Savior. And that was 69 years ago. You know, it made a tremendous difference in my life. And by the way, the time that I was working at Harlan Rose, we had a Bible reading every day in that firm. There were a number of excellent Bible teachers among men that were working in Harlan Rose and shipbuilding, and we had a Bible reading every day for half an hour. And that's where I got my theological education. You know, there were men of every stripe and every color. I mean, theologically, that attended those Bible readings. And I had the experience of sitting and listening to the thoughts of people that came from the Salvation Army, the Methodists and the Presbyterians, and the Episcopalians and all the rest of it. But there were 2 outstanding leaders at that Bible reading. Men who were in the assembly and who used the entire New Testament, and that's where I got my education. And again, I'm awfully thankful for that truth. It led me into the great truths of the Word of God. And another thing, 2 weeks after I was saved, I was baptized and received into the fellowship of the assembly, and I never have been anywhere else in that time from now. You know, I believe today that we need to understand the great truths of what we stand for in the assembly. I had that background, and I'm thankful for good men that took me under their wing and taught me how to preach out in the open air. And by the way, that is where we learn to preach. standing at the street corner, and twice a week, standing at the street corner, and preaching the gospel, and seeing people passing by, and seeing people saved. So something happened in those early days, and many a time I think about it. There was a place in Belfast called Sandy Row. It was a place where there was a tavern at the corner, and people passing by all the time. And every week, twice a week, on Wednesday night and on Saturday night, we had an open-air meeting in that corner. And one night it was raining. We had a little prayer meeting before we went out to have a meeting at the corner, and we had a little prayer meeting. And after the prayer meeting, when we went out of it, the rain was coming down. But people were walking up and down, and we thought, well, now we'll go ahead and have a meeting. And there were three of us, three young men. And by the way, one of them was John Ruddick, who had spent 50 years in the Lord's work in Honduras as a pioneer missionary. One was John, and another was a brother, and I took his funeral just a little while ago at Part of the Palms. And the three of us were there preaching in the open air, and it was raining. But we had an audience of one man, and he was standing with his back up against the tavern, with the feet kept closed over his eyes, and he looked as if he was drunk. And the three of us had a good preach at him. And we tried to tell him how he got saved and so on, and I group of the most foolish, ridiculous things that ever you saw. Here, three young fellas preaching the gospel with the rain coming down and preaching to a man that looked as if he was drunk with his back up against the pub. In any case, 30 years passed, and I was on one of my furloughs from Africa, and when I was walking down the street in Belfast, a man stopped me, and he said, "Do you remember long time ago, preaching in the open air at that pub, at that corner in Sandy Row?" I said, "Yes, I remember that very well." He said, "You remember when I'm standing with his back up against the pub?" I said, "I remember that too." He said, "I want to tell you how it was that night." And he said, "I got saved that night." And he said, "I'm in fellowship with the Lord Windsor Gospel Hall there in the city of Belfast after 30 years." It was the first one. It was. But in any case, that's where I got my training. And I'm not ashamed of it. The Lord led me in different ways. And again, let me say, I'm not against education. God knows I'm not. I wish I had. But I didn't have the opportunity of it. And to say, I was working from the time I was 13, and when I came to 21 years of age, I left home two documents in my pocket. And one was a letter of commendation from an assembly where I had been in fellowship since God saved me. And the other was a document from Hartland Boats, the shipbuilders, to say that I was a journeyman shipwright. And those were the two documents that I had in my pocket when I left home. Now, I want to say this, that there were two books that I believe in reading my Bible and studying my Bible. But I do believe that good literature can be a tremendous help for young people. And I've always been interested in biography. And there were two books made an indelible impression upon my mind in those early days. Now, the first one was The Life of Hudson Taylor of China. And by the way, there's two volumes that were written connected with his life, written by Mrs. Grattan Guinness. And the first volume is The Growth of the Soul. It tells of the early life of Hudson Taylor and how the Lord led him out in the pioneer missionary work in China. That made a tremendous impression upon my mind. And the second book is a biography by Dr. A.T. Pearson of the life of George Mueller of Bristol. And you know, that made an impression on my mind too. He was the man who taught the church what it means to be living in simple faith and trust in God in the Lord's work. And I made up my mind that if I went into the Lord's work, I wanted to trust the Lord absolutely and follow the principles that George Mueller had taught. Well, in any case, just to cut a long story short, God had exercised my mind about pioneer missionary work in Africa. There's far too many details connected with it that would occupy too much time and speak me about it. But I was absolutely convinced that the Lord had called me to do pioneer missionary work in Angola. I met one of the early pioneers, Mr. Fred Lane, who was one of the men that followed Fred Stanley Arnott into Kerengense in the early, at least in 1889. And Mr. Fred Lane, he came to the assembly where we were, and I heard about some tribes that were completely unevangelized that had never heard the gospel, and I made a compact with the Lord that if ever he would open my way, I would like to go into those tribes and seek to take the gospel to them. Well, in any case, cutting out a lot of detail, I went home in 1923. Now, that's 64 years ago. And the only equipment that I had was a set of tools that I took with me. And secondly, I had a little handbag in my hand with a few toilet articles. And with two documents in my pocket, a letter of commendation and a letter, or at least a document, from Harold and Wolf about what I had served an apprenticeship in, I set off to go to Central Africa, trusting in the Lord. They gave me a farewell meeting in Belfast, and I'll never, never forget. Dear men that were there at the time, I'm not going to mention names here, but some that you may know, at least some of the older brethren may have known, they were at that meeting. And as I was leaving that night, there was a brother, a man that I'd worked with in Harlan Rose, and he gave me a golden half sovereign. It was made of gold. We call it a half sovereign. In any case, there was another gold piece that was a pound, but this was a half pound. It was worth 10 shillings at that time, but it was a golden half sovereign. And this brother said to me, if you're ever down to your last penny, he said, this is something to fall back on. And I said, thank you, brother. And I got on board ship, and away I went. I spent a year in Portugal, studying the Portuguese language. After I had been there for some little time, I was able to preach in Portuguese, and I stayed there long enough to get fluency in the Portuguese language and be able to preach in it. And then I got a diploma from the Portuguese educational system that I was qualified to teach the Portuguese in the schools in Angola. And so I left, and again, traveling third class on a Portuguese immigrant boat, I set off for Angola. And I landed alone on the west coast of Africa in October 1924 and worked my way up into the interior. The first journey I had there was 540 miles, and that meant walking every step of that. It took me 5 weeks to walk that 540 miles up into the interior. And I located at a place in the north of Angola among those tribes that I heard about it from Mr. Fred Dean. And when I got there, I made a decision. I was a very idealistic kid, and I thought that anybody who was doing pioneer missionary work among people who had never heard the gospel, that they should be unmarried, so that they wouldn't have any family ties and were perfectly free and able to carry on the work of the Lord. When I saw the conditions in that area, I changed my mind. I don't believe that anyone going into an area where you're completely isolated, and especially in a pagan area where all the old pagan customs are still carried on, it's no place for a single young man. I haven't changed my mind about that. Which when I went there, that was the idea that I had, but I changed my mind. And then when I was there, I began to think about a girl that I had met in Portugal. Now, I was a very crude, unsophisticated Irishman. And while I was in Portugal, there were two girls turned up from the United States. One came from Buffalo, New York, and the other one came from Hartford, Connecticut. And one of them, her name was Elizabeth Smith, and the other one, her name was Kate Townsend. Maybe some of you know the name of Sister Abigail. Well, Kate was a niece of Sister Abigail, and the two girls came together to Portugal on their way to Angola while I was still there. And I thought they were very, very high and mighty above me. I was a very crude Irish man, and here's these two sophisticated young ladies, well-educated and all the rest of it, and I thought they would never look at anybody like me. But in any case, we became friends. But I never dreamed that one of those girls ever would be my wife. But when I went up into the interior of Angola and saw the conditions there, I began to think about this girl. And the place where I was and where she was, she had come after me and had gone 300 miles further into the interior from where I was. And she was living at a place called Lumukasai in Chokwiland. And since I was to come into the meeting tonight, I heard the name of Dr. Morey that lived in St. Louis. Now, The trophy fire was opened up by two men. One was William Midland, who came from the Lapland Street Assembly in Chicago, and the other was Tom Leather, who came from the Somerville Assembly in Boston. And they were the men that pioneered the Choctaw tribe, and that was where Elizabeth was working, in there. But I was 300 miles away, and I talked to her, and asked her if she would share my life at another walk 300 miles. So I set off with two of the Africans carrying my accoutrements and so on, and carrying food, and I walked the 300 miles in there. It took me 16 days, sleeping on the ground at night beside a fire, and going on the next day. And when I arrived there and had a talk with Elizabeth, I asked her, would she be willing just to leave everything here? It was a mission station, and it had been developed, and to leave that and to go maybe 300 miles away up into the place that I wanted to go and leave everything behind. It was absolutely no civilization whatever. And she had to consider very carefully what she should do, but finally she said yes. And then I asked her, would you like to come with me? And she said yes. And with my head on the clouds, I walked 300 miles back again from where I came from. And then in 1926, at Christmas time, I gathered up all that I had. And I started off the third time at 300 miles into Chuckland. And on the 23rd of June, 1927, we were married by Portuguese law before a Portuguese military officer. And also before an African chief. The African chief, he put his mark and his thumb mark on our wedding certificate, and I still have it. By the way, when I was up on this first journey, I contracted a lot of malaria. And that day, when we were getting married, was a lady doctor. And her name was Laura Jacobs. She was the kind of a person who didn't she didn't care what she said. Very outspoken. And on our wedding day, she gave Elizabeth a letter. And in the letter was a little gift, and along with the gift was a letter to say that I want to congratulate you on your wedding. And she said, I'm sorry to tell you that you're marrying this man that very him. He's full of malaria. And I was as thin as a reel at the time on account of the different fevers that I had, and that was what she had on her wedding day. Now, it's 60 years ago since we were married, and Laura Jacobs was the Lord long ago. And I'm still wandering around. I'm not bragging. God knows I have no right to brag about anything. But I'm awfully thankful that for these 60, we had our 60th wedding anniversary on the 23rd of June this year at the CML building here in New Jersey. And I'm awfully, awfully thankful for God's kindness in preserving care all these years. Now, as far as the Pope's concerned, I've mentioned George Mueller. And the principles that he taught there in connection with simple faith and trust in God in the Lord's Word. And I can say this, I have never at any time ever mentioned money or support to any human being. I've kept that to myself and taken it to the Lord. There was a whole year in 1941, at the height of the war, when we received no mail at all for a year. And at that time, it was a difficult time. It was the height of the war, as you know, in 1941. And we were completely isolated at that time, and for a whole year we never got any mail at all, or help from the outside. And yet, we never missed a day. We never went into debt for one penny to anybody. I never have. We have never been in debt for a penny to any human being, and God supplied our need. I have never written a form letter in my life. I tried to follow the principles that George Mueller taught, to look to God alone, and not to any human being. And I can say to the honor and glory of God that He has oversupplied our needs. Don't go away with the idea that I'm making any appeal here tonight. I have more than I need. And we have the privilege of passing on funds that we don't need ourselves to other people, so that I can testify to the grace of God and to God's kindness, that as far as these principles of support of the Lord, if you're in the place where God has sent you, He will supply your need. Now, the time is gone, and I'm not going to go into a lot of trouble over these years that have happened. But just to put it in a nutshell, Elizabeth and I spent 40 years in pioneer missionary work among those tribes Not only did we learn Portuguese, but we had to learn 3 African languages. And the last one, we had to commit to writing. And we had to do translation work in these languages, and also not only translation work in the Bible, but also in a hymn book. It's much, much more difficult to translate a hymn and get the rhyme and the rhythm in the hymn and have it in such a way that the people would enjoy singing it. The Africans love to sing, and we had the privilege over the years of telling people the gospel. And I'm thankful to say that a large number of attendees have been formed over there during these 40 years. Now, just a word about my fellow workers. I always listen when any missionary is giving a report of his work, what he has to say about his fellow workers. And all I want to say is that all the men and women that I have been associated with in Central Africa have been good men. I take off my hat to them. I could spend a long time here tonight telling of some of those men that have given their lives for the spread of the gospel and doing it along scriptural lines and seeing assemblies formed and teaching the word of God. I thank God for them. Our fellow worker for many years was David Long. David, he translated the whole Bible from Genesis to Revelation into the Chokwe language, and I tell you, that's not the work of an amateur. And he did a wonderful job, and the Bibles have been printed by the British and Foreign Bible Society and sent out to Angola. You know Albert Horton? Possibly some of you do. Albert, I take off my hat to my dear brother. He has translated the whole Bible from Genesis to Revelation in the Low Valley language, and the people have been taught to read it. This is one of the priorities in pioneer missionary life, to give the people the Bible in their own tongue and teach them how to read it, and then teach them the principles of it. And then when you do that and you see an assembly formed and leaders raised up and the plurality of assemblies in an assembly, that is the prime priority of the life of any pioneer missionary. I was back just not so very long, about 3 years ago. I was back in Angola, and I was able to make a survey of the number of assemblies that are functioning today, in spite of all the political conditions that you know about, under a Marxist government, and the figure I came up with, there are 516 New Testament assemblies gathered in the Lord's name simply, and carrying on the work in Angola today. 516 assemblies. Now, many of the leaders have been shot, and I'm not going to hurry your mind by telling you some of the things that I witnessed. Some of my dear, dear friends of over 50 years were taken out and executed. Some of them have died of starvation on account of the continued fighting between the two African political parties in Angola at the present time. And again, I'm not going to go into that. But we do thank God that God has blessed this work, and New Testament assemblies have been formed and continuing at the present time. And as far as we know, there are 516 going on at the present time. We had to leave in 61, come home on account of the fighting. But I've been back 5 different times since then. I'm going around and trying to minister among the people over there. And God is still continuing to work. And again, let me say, I take off my hat with a few missionaries that are left. The whole interior has had to be evacuated as far as the missionaries are concerned. There are no missionaries from assemblies in the interior of Angola, but at the coast, at Luanda in the capital, Charlie Shorten and his wife Betty are there. And I thank God for Charlie. He's one of my dearest, dearest friends, a beloved brother in the Lord, absolutely faithful and true, and carrying on the work there in Luanda and his wife Betty. And then there are 3 women that are there. There's Paris Floyd, there's Marjorie Beckwith, and there's Ruth Hadley. Ruth is an English girl, and they are the only missionaries from the assemblies in Angola at the present time. We thank God for them, and we need our prayers. As we look at the future, we don't know what's going to happen. But at least, the work has been done, the gospel has been preached, and the assemblies have been formed on the top of the word. I don't think I have anything else to say about it, except the verse that I've read here. This was a verse that made a tremendous impression on my mind. I beseech you by the mercies of God that you present your body as a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service.
You know, God has given us this body.
It is a stewardship. It doesn't belong to me. But it's a stewardship that God has given us this body, this human body. And we have the wonderful privilege of coming and present it to God. Not a dead sacrifice like the Old Testament, but a living sacrifice. And when we do that, and commit ourselves to God, and we're in the place where God is good as God can bless us. God bless us.